to him somehow they are tainted with regimentation. I presume he has not had the opportunity that I have had to observe their growth and their great accomplishments during these past 20 years. He has picked up some strange ideas from the men around him, bitter obstructionists who oppose these programs in Congress and who seek now to divert attention from the record with faithless, hollow warnings about iron-fisted regimentation and a sinister government in Washington. In short, the general has fallen victim to the same old oratory of the past 20 years, the oratory of the out always trying to get in that we've been hearing for so long. But you farmers, I'm sure, have not fallen victim to that oratory. You helped start these programs. You have voted for the farmer committees which administer, and you have voted for the party which sponsors. But even just keeping what we have doesn't seem to me enough. Our farm policies must be something more than static. They cannot be handed over to undertakers. They are living devices of free government, sensitive always to changing needs and new conditions. The work of free government is never finished. We have just begun the task of bringing rural telephone service up to present-day standards. We must find ways to bring low-income farmers into fuller participation in the economic life of the country. Price support will be debated in every Congress and changed in many if the experience of the past is a good guide. During the term of the next Congress, the next president, the choice between 80-90% support and the sliding scale of support must again be faced. And in this connection, farmers everywhere should be interested in a recent interview with Senator Taft, in which he says, and I quote him, he believes that General Eisenhower will be for a flexible farm support program after the present two-year agreement for 90% parity is over. And Senator Taft has, as you know, established himself as the greatest living authority on what General Eisenhower really thinks. And there is the challenge of finding a way to support perishable products. The Democratic platform pledges the party to continue its search for practical methods of supporting perishable. As we watch the price of hogs, the urgency of this problem becomes increasingly clear. I have no solution, no easy solution to all. I'm perfectly candid about it. But I do ask you this, on the basis of the record, which party can you trust to seek a fair solution? The Republican Party's record on such unresolved issues is clear enough, but their campaign talk, it seems to me, is impossible to decipher. Their confusion began when they adopted a platform packed with vague and empty words for a program which they have, consistently opposed, and with plenty of qualifying words scattered through it as loopholes. This is what they say. They aim at parity. That's the word they use, aim. And they favor a sound REA program, of course reserving the right to decide what is sound. When I practice law, we look for the jokers in contracts very often. And in this Republican farm platform, it's not a question of finding the loophole in the contract, it's a question of finding the contract in the loophole. And since their convention, they seem to have piled on even more confusion. Some time ago, my distinguished opponent told a group of farm editors that he was as much at sea in a farm group as they would be trying to plan an attack across the channel. Well, this admirable and engaging frankness has been replaced now by an effort to stuff the Republican voting record out of sight, and then the Republican platform, and now to beguile the farmer with confident talk about a Republican farm program that, if it looks like anything at all, looks like an exact facsimile of the Democratic platform. Perhaps it's due to the fact that instead of two Republican parties, that is the modern party and the ancient party, as in foreign affairs and almost everything else, there are at least three Republican parties when it comes to agricultural policy. One group seized control of the platform riders in Chicago and in vague words endorsed a sliding scale of price support. A second group produced the general speech at Casson, Minnesota, a month ago. There he came out for 98% support, and also in plowing under the very plank which the Republican word jugglers had toiled so hard to create. And the third and most important group, or party, is the one that I have recently refreshed in your memory, the one that made the voting record in Congress. And it's the most important one, for it's the party of action and not of words. It's the one which has been silent until after the election. But last June, when Congress was in session, it was the boss, and a majority of the Republicans in the House voted against 98% support. Farmers may well ask, which of these Republican parties can we trust? The party that voted against 90% support in June, the one that came out half-heartedly for flexible support in the platform in July, or the party which wrote the general speech in September? I think the answer, of course, is that a two-headed elephant trying to go in three directions at the same time is not exactly a dependable animal. I ask you if you can trust a party that has voted consistently against your program. Can you trust a party that votes against them and now, for a few short weeks before the election, pretends to be for them? Can you trust a party with a clear record of obstruction and empty-handed when it comes to constructive ideas? Can you trust a party that cannot tell the difference between regimentation and local democratic neighborhood initiative? I don't believe America is going to entrust its future to the masters of a house divided against itself on foreign policy, on domestic policy, and perhaps, worst of all, on foreign policy. I ask these questions wherever I go, whether I'm talking about labor problems, inflation, cost of government, or our relations with other countries. And the answer must come from the whole citizen, the whole man. Nobody is just a farmer or just a farm woman or just a businessman dependent on farmers for his own prosperity, or just a worker in a meatpacking plant. The fragmented man doesn't exist. He's a myth. I address these questions about which party you can trust to the whole man. Perhaps a farmer, yes, but also a father, a husband, an educator of his children, a man with some religious faith, devoted to his country, who prays for peace in this tormented world, and who thinks hard and long about matters which go far beyond his farm. If Republican leaders had truly accepted the farm program and had made a record of reasonable sincerity, we would have a better political campaign. We would talk more about other issues of deep interest to this whole man. And one of these is good government, decent, careful government. I am proud that the cost of government in my state of Illinois in relation to the income of its citizens is one of the lowest in the whole United States. And I am even prouder that commercial gambling is at its lowest point in Illinois, that our schools and our mental hospitals have been vastly improved, that we are reconstructing our immense and neglected highway system, that we have actually reduced the operating costs of most state departments in spite of wage increases and inflated costs, that we have reorganized and tightened up all along the line. I have learned, as governor of a great state, that to make government lean and efficient is a hard and a demanding job, but that it can be done. You can govern efficiently just as you can farm efficiently. And the better you do anything, the more fun, the more satisfaction there is in it. And this, by the way, reminds me that our friend here this afternoon, Herschel Lovman, the Democratic candidate for governor of Iowa, would like to. I think he'd like to work. at governing better too. And from what I know about him, he could do it, and I hope you give him the chance to do it. There are many other things I should like to mention to you here. I think we often forget, in these post-war years, the very decisive role that food and the people who produce it has played and is bound to play in our efforts to reach a stable peace in this world. The ability of the American farmer to beat back the encroachment of hunger in our own land and to produce enough for foreign assistance in times of acute need is one of the great and the shining hopes of our free world. Our friends abroad know this, if we at home sometimes forget. I know some of you are wondering how your parents will manage when you have to go into the army. Some of you are laboring too, beyond your strength and your advanced years, because your boys are not at home. I will not give you any cheap promises that I can make everything right. I would deserve your contempt if I did. But I can say that our best chance for peace is strength, because we are dealing with people who understand only brute strength. And a strong and a healthy agriculture is the base of a strong and a healthy national economy. We will have to stand fast. My friends, we will have to work hard and face the ugly realities of our world, perhaps for years to come. And meanwhile, I hope and I pray that we will count our countless blessings. And need I add that one of those blessings is the Democratic Party. Well, I won't press that point, but we have had the people's confidence for a long time, not by being perfect, because perfection is not given to human beings. And I am willing to concede, by the way, that we Democrats are human. I like to think that we have held your confidence because we have earned it, and that we have earned it in turn because we have kept faith with you, not alone as farmers, but as whole citizens, building our nation's strength and thereby building a lasting peace in the world. I'm deeply grateful to you for being so patient and for listening to me in this wind. I've had a good time. I'm touched by your courtesy and the numbers in which you come out to hear me in this inclement weather. I have little doubt that if you use your head, that the outcome on November 4th will be good for you and perhaps for me.
By transcription, you...